Hey everyone, I'm Bobby Sylvester, and we're back with the Fantasy Pros Baseball Podcast after 2 months away. I've got my healthy baby girl, and it's been a blast, but I've really missed talking about baseball. And after all this time, there is a ton to talk about. My guest today is Dan Harris, Fantasy Pros featured writer. Dan, what's going on, man?
Not much, buddy. I'm really happy to talk about baseball and forget the fact that winter is apparently here, and I'm freezing my butt off. So let's do it.
It is the last fairly warm day here, and I'm talking like 55 degrees. Like, I want it to be at least 80 every day, otherwise I'm a little bit grumpy. So 55 degrees is not good, but had to go out and clean the garage while I had a chance, and it is about to get so cold. I think we should just move south, man.
Yeah, the worst possible thing, because I moved north, you know, to New Hampshire, where winter starts in like September and ends in like June. So it's pretty horrible and I become miserable. So anything that gets my mind into sort of like spring training or baseball where it's usually warm, I'm all for.
There you go, man. So you can all follow Dan on Twitter at DanHarris80 and I'm at BobbyFantasyPro. Dan, I'm getting really pumped about the winter meetings, man. All this news, it's probably going to come of it. I know the playoffs were incredible, but I think the winter meetings might be my favorite.
Yeah, it's really fun, at least especially if you have a team that frankly is going to do anything, like probably yours is. But there are a lot of names out there this year. I feel like more so than usual, whether it's involving trades or free agents, stuff like that. There's a lot of big names out there. So there's going to be some fireworks for sure.
It's better than the last few years for sure. But if you compare it to next year, it's like completely dwarfed. Next year is going to be so much fun. I mean, you remember that year when Mark Teixeira signed and it seemed like every single big free agent was out on the market. It's going to be like that times two.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. I mean, I feel like guys like Donaldson, like Josh Donaldson, stuff like that, they're going to be like, whatever. Yeah, well, you know, they're like third tier players at this point because you're going to have Harper, right?
Harper, Machado.
Machado, right.
Kershaw.
Maybe Kershaw, right. It's going to be a big thing. And it's interesting because it kind of impacts what people are going to do this year, right? Because obviously you've got like a guy like Stanton who's on the market. You've got JD Martinez on the market. And I'm sure some teams, the teams that can afford it, are sort of thinking like, well, do we want to clog up our right field spot right now? Or do we really want to leave it open for throwing every dollar we have at Bryce Harper? Yeah. So it's going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah. Dan, did you enjoy the playoffs as much as normal? I mean, I know everyone was like, man, these games were incredible. All the pitchers are imploding and runs scored. I just don't think it was very good baseball. I mean, I'm sure I'm in the minority, but I'd rather watch the Giants or Cardinals or Royals win by playing great baseball.
Yeah, I mean, as a baseball purist, which I feel like you and I both are, the balls are clearly juiced. You know, whatever they've done to it, it's clearly something. This is not a coincidence that suddenly balls are flying out of the yard. As a baseball purist, no, I like watching the pitchers duel, right? I like watching the 2-0 game that goes by in 2 hours and 20 minutes, you know what I mean? But it's a little hard to deny that the playoffs as a whole, and especially the World Series, were just phenomenal to watch. You know what I mean? The drama that was built in.
It was exciting.
It was exciting. I mean, as someone who lives on the East Coast, it was a little annoying because every day I'd, you know, be on 3 hours of sleep or whatever from the night before. But as a whole, yeah, I mean, the drama, it's hard to argue with it. I would like the baseballs to go back to normal. But in terms of how exciting the playoffs were, pretty much throughout, you know, starting with the wild card games and throughout the World Series, it was a pretty awesome playoff. So yeah, I'm more in the majority here.
Absolutely. I mean, that game in the World Series was one of the most exciting baseball games I've ever seen. I mean, it ranks right up there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think baseball can be exciting in many ways. You can have a game that's tight and, you know, within a run and a pitcher's duel. Those games are exciting. But games like, you know, Game 2 of the World Series and Game 5 of the World Series, the 13-12 game, those games are just incredible. I mean, I remember watching it and at multiple times I was like, well, this game has to be over at some point, at like six different times in that game. So look, especially for a casual baseball fan, and I understand it's hard for me to accept the fact that, you know, especially the younger generation, you know, baseball's a little boring. I mean, back when I was growing up and probably when you were growing up, although you're significantly younger than I am, you know, sort of going to a game in the summer and the laziness of it and with my dad and stuff like that, that was part of the beauty of it, you know. But now that's sort of like, oh, it's boring. It takes too long. We've got to blah, 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 moving along. So I get it that the casual fan probably likes to watch all the constant sort of action. But yeah, I'm just as happy to watch a pitcher's duel. But this playoffs in particular, man, I mean, regardless of the fact that the balls were deuced and there were 10,000 home runs, it was pretty amazing.
And I don't want to linger on this too long, but I think we should mention Roy Halladay. What a sad story, Dan. Just horrible, man.
everything about it, honestly. And Halliday was kind of like a throwback type of guy. I mean, I'm sure, you know, we both, every time I'm on the podcast, we talk about the Ace of Spader, who's the best Twitter follow for any baseball fan. And he just tweeted out great stats about Halliday, you know, after he died, that he still leads all of baseball in complete games since 2009, despite the fact that he's been retired for several years at this point.
That's incredible.
Yeah, he had five seasons with at least 200 strikeouts and 40 or fewer walks. No other pitcher in baseball history has more than three seasons. So he was incredible. It's really, really sad, especially, frankly, just on a personal level, putting aside the fact that the guy is an all-time baseball great. I'm sure he'll be inducted into the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. But yeah, also just like, he was a good guy from everything you sort of read about it. And like, he loved flying. He was so excited about it. He went, and just to have this happen, it was really kind of like a kick to the gut a little bit for sports fans. You know what I mean? We forget, frankly, that, you know, life is fragile and we just play a game and we love these guys. And then, you know, they're subject to the same things that we are. So it's really sad. And it's definitely a sad day for all sports fans, but especially for MLB.
Absolutely. And he was so close to his family too. That's the worst part about it. We don't know the man. Like, the stories are fantastic in Paint Quite the Picture, but I want to share a few more numbers from the Ace of Spader. I just think it's the best way for us to be able to remember him. Roy Halladay had a 1.48 ERA plus from 2001 to 2011. So that's 11 years there. Nolan Ryan didn't have a single season with at least 150 innings and an ERA plus of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Roy Halladay had at least three seasons with at least 225 innings and 6.25 strikeouts per walk. That's the most since Tommy Bond had his fourth in 1884 when six balls were required for a walk. That's incredible, man.
Yeah, he really was. It was just not normal what he was. He was basically from a different era pitching in this era. Yeah. He was just a workhorse. He was incredible to watch. And, you know, everything about him, frankly, I mean, again, you know, I agree that sort of the best way to honor him is just to talk about the stats. But, you know, the stories about that, I think it was Sports Illustrated cover or maybe ESPN cover, where he went to the Phillies with Cliff Lee and Cole Hamels, and they wanted to do the big four with Roy Oswalt and stuff like that. And Halliday insisted that Joe Blanton be part of the cover and that it be about the entire pitching staff instead of just like
that's
the big
awesome.
Four. Yeah, he was just a good dude. He was a phenomenal pitcher. I look forward to when he's inducted into the Hall of Fame, but it is incredible. I mean, he was so young. What was he, 40 years old? It's awful to think about.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the winter meetings, Dan. It's prediction time. And we'll start with Giancarlo Stanton because that's what all the talk is about right now. Where do you think he's going to end up?
I mean, there are so many variables at play in this one. The fact that he's an incredibly elite hitter, that he's owed $300 million, that he has a no-trade clause, that he plays in the state with no income tax. And so, you know, all that. Obviously, the Giants and the Red Sox and your Cardinals are supposed to be the big suitors. Look, if I'm going to predict anyone, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say the Dodgers. And the reason is, number one, I do think that he really wants to be on the West Coast, if possible. He's from Southern Cal, so I think that. And while I could see the Giants, they don't really have a farm system right now. You know, they've kind of depleted it in recent years. The Dodgers obviously have the money. They have a good system. So in the end, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say the Dodgers.
I don't think that the Cardinals or the Red Sox have any chance. I mean, we've seen reports that Stanton would not waive his no trade clause to go there. I think that the Cardinals made a really good offer, apparently. And I think the Marlins would have jumped all over that. They said they would prefer to trade him to the Cardinals, but I think they just have to let it be out there that the Cardinals are really interested in offering all these pieces so they can try to get more than they're actually going to get. But really, it comes down to the Dodgers or Giants. I don't think he's going to either. I think he's actually going to end up in Miami because they're just asking for too much. I mean, the Giants are in this consideration because they could actually take most of the contract, but they have nothing to offer. Like, I don't see the Giants getting him, and the Dodgers just aren't willing to pay that much, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd probably agree. The Cardinals probably are the best fit, right? I mean, Miami is starving for young, controllable pitching, and certainly you guys have that. So it would clearly be a pretty good fit if you could make it work. But I mean, again, I don't know. Really, you hear guys say all the time that they don't want to waive their no trade clause and stuff like that. And that sometimes it just is a way to get more out of the team that's training for them. But he does seem to prefer to be on the coast. I don't know. It's so complicated, again, because he is an absolutely elite player, obviously, as you know, but it's $300 million. You know, it's not as if you're just sort of like, yes, I get to. You also have to have the financial flexibility to be able to take it on. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I kind of could see the Dodgers doing it. But other than the Dodgers, I agree that for me, the other alternative is that he just stays with Miami. So that, but my prediction is the Dodgers, my official prediction.
It might be the kind of thing where like he's holding out to try to go to the Giants or the Dodgers. And if that doesn't work, he'll say, okay, just go ahead and trade me to St. Louis. That way he doesn't have to stay in Miami.
Yeah, no, it's definitely possible. And again, I don't know if he's necessarily unhappy in Miami. I don't know if that necessitated this or really whether it's just Jeter came in and said, no, this is what we're doing. So, you know, who knows? And frankly, there's no absolute rush to deal him. Obviously, they have him signed for another, whatever it is, 10 more years. So, you know, they certainly don't have to do it in this offseason. But in the end, you know, I don't know. Considering that where his value is and considering his injury history, I could see the Marlins being really motivated to try to move him. So, you know, in the end, it's probably 50-50 whether he does get moved. But again, I do think it's going to be the Dodgers if anyone does make a move.
All right. The other big hitter is JD Martinez. I think he's going to the Red Sox.
Yeah, I agree. I really do. First of all, I also, you know, because I, you know, you're a pretty modest guy. You must have been the highest person in the entire industry on Martinez, even when he hurt his foot in preseason. And I was like, well, he's going to miss a lot of time. You're like, nah, man, go get this guy. This guy's going to be fine. Use a high draft pick on him. So kudos to you in the preseason last year.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, you're welcome. I remember it clearly, but
I had him top 15. And then when he got hurt, I think I had him top 40 and his ECR was about 65. So I don't know if I was the highest, but I was definitely right up there. I was definitely the loudest about
that. You were certainly the loudest, which makes up for a lot. But again, yeah, in terms of where he's going, yeah, I think it's got to be the Red Sox. Again, you know, he's going to get a boatload of money, as well he should. He's deserved it. The Sox need some punch. You know, they were 10th in the majors in runs scored last year. They were last in the American League with 168 homers. I guess he would DH and play first, I would assume, unless they sort of move out Jackie Bradley or something like that. But either way, they need pop. And the only way they wouldn't do it, I could see, is if they do something like maybe sign like a Carlos Santana or an Eric Hosmer or something like that, and then try to wait for Bryce Harper. But I do think JD Martinez to the Red Sox makes by far the most sense, and I think it's going to happen.
Who's in second place? Like, who else could you see him going to besides, obviously, the Diamondbacks re-signing there?
Right. Literally, those were the only two people that I could see doing, because what's he going to get legitimately? I mean, I know Boris is asking for $200 million plus. He might not get that, but he's going to get, you know, over 150 for sure, and there just aren't that many teams that can really play it. So when I sort of said, we sort of said, all right, well, let's look at the major free agents, look at where they're going to go, it was hard for me to come up with anyone other than the Red Sox or the Diamondbacks. So frankly, those are literally the only two teams on my list. Now, there are always surprise teams, and you could maybe see the Giants then, because they're a desperate for an outfielder. If they strike out on Stanton, they don't have to give up anything on their farm system. They have money, and really, as bad as last year was, they're never that far away. It looks like they're ready to move on from Pence, and they've always struggled sort of to get power in the outfield. So I guess I could see them. But in the end, I this is one that I feel relatively confident is going to end up with the Red Sox. It just makes too much sense for all parties.
Me too. Okay, the two big starting pitchers on the market, Yu Darvish and Ohtani coming over from Japan. I love both these guys. I know Darvish was horrible in the World Series, but I think he's going to be a bargain to someone. And I have him going to the Braves. Who do you have?
Ooh, that's interesting. I actually think that he's going to wind up with the Angels. I think that they did a nice job. I mean, it's a little bit of a, you know, Billy Epler basically came out and just said, we're not, you know, making a big pitching addition. We want to add to our offense. But frankly, they did a pretty nice job staying in contention last year, considering Ricky Nolasco was like their leading pitcher, right? I mean, they've got a lot of young kids with, you know, Richards and Skaggs and Heaney and Shoemaker and stuff like that. They could use that frontline ace sort of to go. And they've had a lot of front row views of Darvish pitching in the West. So for me, I think he's going to stay on the West Coast. And my guess is the Angels, but I like the Braves call. That's interesting.
Yeah, the Braves are really close to competing, I think. And getting that ace right now is really going to help. I think they're, for next year, I think I would take the Braves without Darvish over the Angels. So I think if Darvish wants to compete, I think the Braves would make sense.
Yeah, no, that's fairly interesting. I don't know whether or not they're going to want to offer him the contract. I mean, again, their whole organization is a little screwed up right now with the whole thing with their international signings and stuff like that. So it's unclear what their farm system is going to look like in light of all the stuff with their former GM. But again, for me, you know, Artie Moreno, he likes to make a splash, man. He likes to do the big thing. And, you know, I don't know how long their window is right now with Trout. I don't even know how many more years he's under contract. It's got to only be a couple at this point. So, you know, they kind of are still in a win now mode. So that's just my guess. But again, Billy Epler has kind of poo-pooed that. So we'll see. But that's my prediction.
What about Ohtani? I have him going to the Rangers.
Yeah, the Rangers are great. I mean, this is really, right? You want to talk about how you deal with this. You've got basically a guy who could be a two-way player. Nobody can offer him more than a couple of $1 million because of the international signing rules. So literally everybody yes. is sort of up there. The Rangers were definitely one of my final choices. The only other two that I thought of really could have were maybe the Mariners. Obviously, they've got a pretty big, you know, with Ichiro and stuff like that. They've certainly yeah. got a tie in there. And if not, look, you could see the Yankees. I mean, you know, it's definitely possible sort of to get in there. He can make a ton in endorsement deals. It's obviously, I mean, for me, it's hard to see him going to an NL team because I do think he's going to be allowed. And look, in the end, he's coming in. And he's like, I'm not going to make any money, but you are going to give me exactly what I want because I can sign with anybody I want. And what I want is to pitch on a six-man rotation, not a five-man rotation. And I want to hit every couple of days. And so you basically have to do that. And I don't think an NL team is going to be like, great, we'll throw you out in the outfield to potentially get injured. So it's probably going to be an AL team. I do like the Rangers for sure. But other than that, I would think maybe the Mariners would be my choice.
Here's my one sleeper. And it's because of what you talk about. Like, no one's going to want to throw him out in the outfield. What do you think Ohtani wants more than anything? He can't get the money. He wants to prove himself so he can get the money. He wants to hit, man. He wants both. And there's one GM who's crazy enough to give him both. It's AJ Preller for the San Diego Padres. I could see him going to the Padres and playing both ways, like getting 300 at-bats, pitching 180 innings, and just being a monster, and then going and getting a huge contract because he proves he can do it.
Well, I do think that the Padres are probably in line to do something big this winter, and I agree basically for the reasons that you said. But I don't know, man. If you represent Ohtani, I mean, you'd have to think, look, buddy, okay, you've got the chance to make a huge contract. You can hit as much as you want. We can make that a priority. But God forbid you're running for a ball and you dive in the outfield and you tear up your shoulder. There it goes out the window. So I really do think, I love the thought. And I do think that the Padres are going to be sort of a surprising player with a lot of these free agents this winter. But I think, honestly, in the end, Ohtani is probably going to go to an AL team that basically can offer him a DH role. But it's going to be really fast. I mean, you don't see two-way players obviously ever. So again, the money part of this is incredible, really, because he's coming out so young and he's subject to the international signing rules. Money really doesn't matter right now. Anybody can be involved completely. You know what I mean? I'm like begging for the Mets, right? I'm like, well, Sandy Alderson, you like to do weird things for publicity. You signed Tebow. You tried to sign Michael Jordan when you were the GM of the Athletics. So go out and just sort of get him, yeah. Say, hey, whatever you want. He'll get, you know, they like CA. But obviously, again, I do think it's going to be an AL team. And again, the Rangers make the most sense, or the Mariners for me. So I'm going to be more conservative, but I do like the Padres call. It's intriguing, and they will do something big this winter. I feel pretty confident in that.
Okay, Dan, final two that I think are slated to make at least $100 million. Jake Arrieta, Eric Hosmer.
Yeah. Arrieta, honestly, this is also one that I feel kind of confident in. I think it's going to be the Rangers. Again, maybe they'll go with Ohtani and stuff like that. That seems to make too much sense to me. They have the financial flexibility. They need pitching for sure. Obviously, they gave up Darvish, and Arrieta is a Texas guy. You know, he grew up in Texas. He went to school in Texas. It just seems like
it's
a natural fit. Yeah. So, I mean, he could
yeah.
do a reunion with the Cubs maybe, but, you know, there's some tension there. Who knows? I think, frankly, if the Red Sox don't land J.D. Martinez, then I could see Hosmer going there because, you know, they sort of been intrigued like that. And he would really be, I think, a really good fit for that park, given the way he hits the ball to the opposite field. I think he's sort of the perfect lefty for the Green Monster. But if not, honestly, I think I only have two other choices. One is obviously the Royals, who have said that they've made it a priority to try to re-sign him, even over the other two. But it's unclear whether or not they're going to be able to do the money. If not, this is where I think the Padres step in. I think this is definitely okay. something where they sort of jump in and say, this is going to be our splash. We're ready to do something. But again, I think that's sort of the third in the pecking order. So for me, I think because the Red Sox are going to land Martinez, I think the Royals are going to land Hosmer. But if not, if they can't, I actually think it's going to be the Padres for the exact reasons that you talked about with Ohtani.
I've got Arrieta going to the Angels, and my number two was the Rangers. So I'm right there with you. Hosmer, I think, is actually going to go to the Giants. I could see him re-signing with the Royals, but the Giants need a bat. I think it's going to be the bat that they're able to get.
Well, that's not a bad call, actually, considering they're obviously trying to get sort of the big bat. But if not, yeah, they could, and they can move Belt to the outfield, I guess. Yeah, that actually makes sense. I like that call.
All right, let's move on over to the listener mailbag. And if you want to send in questions, it's mailbag@fantasypros.com. We'll get to as many of them as we can. The shorter and more creative, the more likely they are to be on the show. But I try to respond to as many as possible. The first one comes from Brian in Florida. He wants to know, where do Judge and Bellinger rank in terms of the best rookies in the last 30 years?
I mean, Judge in particular, he might be the best. I mean, you know, what he did this season, again, a lot of part of it is because the balls are juiced. But
yeah, he's my number one.
Yeah, I think he'd probably be up there. Judge is probably one or two. The only one that came to mind of the last 30 years was Trout in 2012. And, you know, his offensive numbers aren't quite on par, although he had 30 homers and 49 steals at a 91% success rate. So that's pretty impressive. And he didn't even play the entire season. And a lot of it was based on his defense. So that's really the only one that I think rivals Judge. So Judge is either one or two. I think Bellinger might be maybe like fifth. He's top five. I think the other ones that might be ahead of him were Pujols, your boy, in 2001 in his first year.
Yeah.
He batted like 330, had 69 walks to 93 strikeouts. I mean, he was incredible. And basically the what I call the Aaron Judge light season, which was McGuire in 87, which is basically like a slightly worse version of what Judge did, right? Almost the exact same thing, but just slightly sort of off in terms of what he did. But frankly, both to me in the last 30 years, they're both top five.
This is how I've got him ranked. Judge is number one over the last 30 years. I've got Pujols number two, McGuire number three, Ichiro number four, Mike Trout maybe number five. I've got Bellinger right around 10. I mean, there's just been so many good rookies. And Bellinger is so much younger than most of those rookies, so it's a lot more impressive. Like, I love Bellinger's future a lot more than I love Aaron Judge's future, because Aaron Judge is like, what, 24, 25 years old? But I think he's the number one rookie hitter in the last 30 years. As far as overall players, I like Fernando Mania a little bit more and Jose Fernandez better as a rookie. But yeah, I'm taking Judge over Pujols and Ichiro.
Yeah, Judge is really, frankly, I kind of, you know, it gets to the very end of the season. And if we're out of our leagues, and you and I especially, we switch our focus a little bit to football, you know what I mean, during the last several weeks. So Judge had been slumping for a lot of the second half. And then I guess he just hit this upswing towards the end and obviously into the playoffs, where he really just, I mean, I didn't realize that he actually finished with 52 homers, which was a little preposterous at this point.
Yeah, but he led baseball in war, man.
I know, dude. He was awesome. He really was. So he definitely had one. I completely forgot Ichiro, by the way. That's obviously one of the top rookie seasons.
He's kind of a rookie.
Yeah, right. Maybe I just didn't think about him because, frankly, he was, you know, so much older than a typical rookie. But yeah, those are great. But again, both of these seasons were definitely in the historical discussion, especially Judge, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Judge was the first rookie in MLB history with at least 45 homers, 100 RBIs, 100 runs scored, and he had 127 walks.
Right.
I think the only rookie hitters who have ever had a better rookie year, Ted Williams and Shoeless Joe Jackson. That's it, man.
Right. Yeah. No, I was thinking about those. I was like, well, how far are we going back? I mean, the only thing with Judge is obviously the strikeouts, right? I mean, he had he was over 200 strikeouts, I think, right? 208 or something like that. But
yeah,
again, whatever. I mean, you know, that's acceptable if you're going to put up the rest of the numbers that you had. So yeah, it really was amazing, which is just absolutely shocking considering how terrible he looked at the end of 2016 in his cup of coffee. I mean, he looked completely overmatched. He looked like a guy who would just never, and even in the preseason, he wasn't a guy that people were really thinking about drafting with anything. It was Greg Bird. You know, everybody was excited about Bird. Nobody really understood. And then, you know, baseball, that's what it is, man. Baseball's crazy.
You're exactly right.
Yep. So,
you know who else led the league in strikeouts though? Sammy Sosa. Like, Sammy Sosa batted 260 with 170 strikeouts. Like, if he played today, it would probably be 220, 230, right?
Right.
I think Aaron Judge is a modern day Sammy Sosa, which is really something. I just think Cody Bellinger might be like A-Rod.
Yeah. I mean, look, obviously, you know, Bellinger sort of, you know, he slumped for a little while there in the middle, but yeah. And he didn't play the full season either. I mean, I know he wasn't upright at the stop, and he had, you know, 39 homers and you know,
in Dodger Stadium.
I know. And you know, by the way, what gets a little bit lost in both of these guys is that, you know, especially for fantasy purposes, at least, they chip in some steals, man. Judge had 9 steals.
You're right.
Bellinger had 10. You know what I mean? If these guys are going to say, by the way, we're going to hit 40 to 50 home runs a year. Oh, and, you know, we'll chip in 10 to 15 steals every year. I mean, game changers, you know, especially for fantasy owners. That really is something that makes a huge difference in the long run.
Agree. All right. Next question. Dame from Wisconsin wants to know what our realistic projection for Ohtani on the mound and at the plate is as a rookie.
Oh, boy. I mean, it's hard. I tried to sort of look at what the, you know, Japanese numbers generally translate into for people who come over and play in MLB. Again, based on what his numbers were in his last kind of full season, I would expect that Ohtani is probably going to get somewhere in the neighborhood of like 300 at-bats. I could be lowballing it, but my guess is he's really just going to hit three times a week or something like that. He's not going to be an everyday guy. And with that, you know, I view him over a full season as a guy who'd probably hit 30 homers, frankly, and have over 100, you know, RBIs, maybe like a 900, 920 OPS or something like that. So for coming over for this season, especially if he does do what I think he'd do, I think he'd probably be a guy who hits about 15 homers, you know what I mean? Probably bats close to 300 or something like that. And for pitching, wow. I mean, again, the thing is he's going to be limited in innings. I don't think he's ever thrown more than 160 innings. Word is he does not want to change his sort of schedule into going to a five-man rotation. So I'd expect, you know, I mean, his stuff is remarkable, you know? So I think it's probably around a mid-2s ERA with around a one whip, maybe a little higher than that, and a little more in the strikeout per inning. But, you know, again, who knows how these guys translate. But I'm curious to hear what your prediction would be.
Yeah, so, I mean, you look at his stats. Yu Darvish, when he came over, was immediately one of the best pitchers in baseball. I mean, he led the league in hits per nine. He led the league with 277 strikeouts. And Ohtani was significantly better and younger. I think Ohtani could be the best pitcher in baseball next year. I'm not saying he's going to be. In fact, if I had to guess, I'd give him 145 innings pitched. I'd put his ERA at about 2.9. I mean, remember, he's coming off an injury too. So I think 145 innings pitched, they take it easy on his arm. But I think he strikes out 11 per nine innings. I'm thinking Luis Severino. I think that's who he is next year as a pitcher.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And I do think that the big thing, again, we, you know, it's a fantasy podcast, so we're talking about baseball generally, but obviously the fantasy implications. I do think that the one thing that fantasy owners are going to need to be aware of is the fact that he probably is going to be absolutely, I mean, your best case scenario might be 160 innings. It's probably going to be closer to 130 or 140 because he gets to make his own rules, yeah. Man. And baseball teams are going to bend because I can't pay him any money. So he's going to do this. So his fantasy impact, while it will be great, it's going to be a little bit capped because of that. So I think that's something to keep in mind. What about hitting? What do you expect him to do with the bat?
I don't think that anyone's really going to give him an opportunity. Like I said, I could see the Padres doing it. So you look at Major League Baseball last year, and there were exactly two pitchers with at least 75 plate appearances. I think he gets 150, like doubles the top pitcher, but I don't think it's too much more than that. I think he bats 245, 800 OPS. Like think Brian Dozier without the speed or positional scarcity. I just think the pitching that he's seeing over there in Japan is significantly worse than what he's going to see here. So I think he strikes out quite a bit, bats about 240 with some pop. And eventually he could be a guy who bats 280 with 35 homers, but I don't think it's necessarily going to happen next year.
Yeah, I do think he's going to get more at bats than that. Cause I do think, again, because of this unusual situation, I could be wrong, obviously, but I think because of the unusual situation that we have going on right now, which is no team can offer him money. I mean, that's the thing. He basically is saying, I'm coming over. I realize I'm costing myself money, but I'm going to basically be playing for you for free this year. You know, maximum would be the Rangers at $3.5 million or whatever. And so, you know what? I'm open to anybody, but you're going to play by my rules. And everything that you hear about him is he wants to hit. He likes hitting. He wants to hit. He considers himself a two-way player. So I think somebody's going to have to basically be able to offer him, okay, look, buddy, you can DH and you can do it two or three times a week. I think that'll get him to about 300 bats. And I think he can easily find his way into 15 homers. I think his average, I don't know what I may have said 300. That may be a little overstated. It, but I definitely see him, even with sort of the discounting of what he could do, what he was doing over there, to be more like a 280-ish type hitter. But again, I'm maybe overly bullish. Also, maybe you have a suggestion of how we handle it in fantasy leagues. How do you handle a two-way player, by the way? I mean, you give credit for his hitting stats, I assume, even though he's a pitcher, which you can't ordinarily do. So that's going to be quite a wrinkle for commissioners to figure out how to handle that.
I don't know if the commissioners are going to get to decide. I think it's a Yahoo, ESPN type of thing. I think what they should do is make two different players. Ohtani the pitcher, Ohtani the hitter. You draft the hitter, or you can draft the pitcher, or you can draft both of them, but I just don't know how else you would do it.
Yeah, that's actually a really good solution, frankly. So I like that idea for sure, yeah. And then you could trade one for the other, and it would be crazy, and it would be madness. So that would be it.
That would be funny.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a good solution.
All right, Eddie from Alabama. He wants to know what our biggest success and biggest failure in predictions were last year.
Whew. All right. Got a few hours there for the failures there. I think there were a couple of guys. Again, you and I did a show shortly before the season started that discussed who we were ending up with a lot in our teams. And those were mostly guys that we were higher on or lower on, whatever. So a guy who I seemed to be much higher on than the market was Anthony Rendon, and we talked about him, and it was just a guy who I felt like people were just kind of forgetting about him because his numbers were a little depressed because he got off to that awful start in the beginning of the year, but he was really good for the rest of it, and nobody wanted him. I mean, I play a lot of auctions, as you know, and you know the average price I kept finding him after third base went down was for like $7 or $8, and I just kept scooping him up because it seemed ludicrous to me. So he obviously had a great year. I was pretty bullish on McCutchen, and he had a pretty solid bounce back year, nothing crazy, but obviously he was definitely worth sort of where he was going in drafts. For pitchers, a guy who I was pretty high on was Dallas Keuchel. I really liked him. I owned him a lot of shares. Now, he obviously sort of fell off a little bit with his injury and then sort of coming back, but as a whole, he was obviously very good. And if we're talking about the middle of the season, if you remember, a guy who I absolutely loved and I told everybody to buy was Aaron Nola, who I really thought was going to have this very big second half, and in the end he did. So overall, those are probably a few of my best calls of the season.
Yeah, those are some really good ones, man. I think everyone probably remembers me yelling about Rich Hill and Lance McCullers. I think I hit those ones, so hopefully you listen to me on that. I would imagine you either unsubscribed from the podcast or you bought Lance McCullers and Rich Hill because I talked about them so much. I think my biggest hit, however, was I write this crystal ball piece every year, and I just make my predictions for everything, for awards, leaders, standings, breakout players, everything like that. I picked the Astros over the Dodgers in the World Series, so I think that was pretty cool.
That's good. Yeah, as a general baseball matter, that's awesome. Yeah. Oh, you saw, I assume, that Sports Illustrated cover, was it, from the 2014 season, where they said you're 2017 champions, introducing the 2017.
Yeah, that was neat,
that
wasn't
it? Awesome, yeah. So you're not quite as cool as that, but that's a pretty good call by you. Very good.
My big whiffs, I'm sure you guys remember this too, Gary Sanchez and Jose Ramirez. I had them both busting and both were awesome. Like, I love them more than consensus for this next year. And sometimes you just got to change your mind, but they're both legitimate fantasy stars.
Are you going to ignore Byron Buxton or are you going to make me
Byron
talk
Buxton
about
was
him?
Awesome in the second half, man.
Oh, yeah.
See,
yeah,
he would have been number one on this list, but he turned it around. So, yeah, I mean, I guess it's a failure because everybody who drafted him, like, cut him after 2 months. You didn't get those end of the year stats. But right. I mean, Byron Buxton's going to be drafting the top 60 this year.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, you know, I think people sort of have fallen for the, wow, he really turned it on at the end of the season and then gotten burned. So we'll see. But he certainly tried to save the season. For me, I part of my philosophy, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, is I always feel like kind of the older players are a little undervalued, and maybe that was a little bit more with the steroid era that philosophy worked a little better. But I definitely was pretty high and higher on guys like Chris Davis and Jose Bautista, both of whom were just absolutely disastrous this year. So I owned a lot of shares of them in bed. For pitching, a guy, I remember, Bobby, when we were talking about it on that show, and I said, you know, man, I'm just getting a lot of shares of Matt Harvey because I could see him getting injured again. And I can see him really returning to form. But the one thing I just don't see any way it's going to happen is if he's going to pitch and he's going to be terrible. And obviously, that's exactly what happened. Like, I remember that quote. I was like, boy, that was horrendous advice. So, yeah, I mean, that was obviously terrible. And another guy to a lesser extent that I was really high on, I really thought was going to have a huge bounce back season. And in the end, he had a subpar season, was Gerrit Cole, who just always looked like he was ready to kind of go on a run of going back. And then he just never did. And then he was just never reliable. So he was definitely a guy I whiffed on. So again, there were plenty of whiffs. I'm sure if I looked back, I could find a ton more, but those were definitely big ones.
Yeah, it happens with every expert, man. There's a bunch of whiffs, a bunch of hits. Another one of mine was Kevin Gausman, who was great in the second half again, but he was so bad in the first half that it just killed people. So sorry, everyone. All right. Last question. Charles from Colorado. He wants to know who are two favorite early sleepers for next season fantasy draft.
That's a great question. Again, you know, I'll sort of harness this out as we get closer to the season. But early on, the guys who I'm kind of looking at who are sleepers, I really like Nomar Mazara this year. You know, he had just kind of a meh, you know, last year. He had 20 home runs for the second straight year. He batted just .253. People were kind of expecting him to take a jump. But I feel like people kind of forget he's 22 only. And he only had 101 plate appearances in AAA. And his ISO, you know, his batting average didn't increase and his OBP didn't really increase. But his ISO actually quietly increased by a little nice thing last year. So I'm kind of thinking that he's a guy who people are no longer excited about, really, because they kind of thought this could be the breakout and it wasn't. And really, I could see this year being the time where he takes the real power jump, maybe get up to 30 home runs and stuff like that, and kind of be a big fantasy asset. And at least from what I can tell right now, there doesn't seem to be a lot of buzz on him. Again, we're so far out. But for now, he's an early sleeper who I would like going in.
He's a monster, man. Like, he's one of the handful of guys that I could actually say, I wouldn't be surprised if he hit 45 homers.
Right. And I feel like what we're thinking about right now is here are guys who, you know, I'm not talking necessarily about an Aaron Judge type who basically almost goes undrafted in a fantasy league and then basically is the MVP of fantasy. I'm not necessarily talking about that. I'm talking more about guys who are generally kind of going to be, I think, undervalued in the fantasy community based on what they did last year, who I think could have a major impact. And yeah, Mazar is a guy who, if things break right, he could really be an impact player as far as a pitcher goes, because he asked for two. The other guy I like, and again, I wasn't sure if his first start against the Yankees kind of opened some eyes, but hopefully his second start against the Yankees kind of put the kibosh on that, is Trevor Bauer. You know, he really, his curveball is just absolutely ridiculous. Not only is it, you know,
he is nasty,
right? He doesn't only just get a lot of swinging strikes, he gets a lot of called strikes with it. But he strikes me as the classic type of guy who, my guess is, he'll fall outside the top 40 starting pitchers about come draft day, around then. And he is a guy who, if finally this is the year where everything sort of comes together, he's the type of guy who could very easily be a top 10 pitcher if he kind of just gets his
head straight. Cy Young contender.
Exactly.
He has that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. His stuff is amazing. With the, once he started throwing his curveball more often, it really made a huge difference. So again, it's not a guy who, when I try to think of this, frankly, before I sort of look at like where the community has people ranked, because there aren't that many rankings out right now, I think of generally just in discussions with guys, like what the market perception is of players. And to me, guys like Mazara, guys like Bauer, there just doesn't, people don't seem to be like, yeah, yeah, that's a guy who I really like, I think could be a breakout next year. So those are the types of guys who I could see being on a lot of my teams, because I think they're guys who can be undervalued and at least have the very potential to make a huge difference in fantasy leagues.
Yeah. I've got a pitcher and a hitter for you as well. My number two guy, who is light years behind number one, by the way, Donaldson LeMay. He's a pitcher for the Padres. He's going to be drafted around number 190, maybe even undrafted. I can assure you, though, every expert in the industry is going to be all over him. He shredded the minor leagues, 11.5 Ks per nine, 3.23 ERA. He was called up and showed flashes of brilliance, then mostly struggled. But then he stopped throwing his changeup and utilized his sinker to death. And wouldn't you believe it, he dominated after that. 10-start run after that, struck out 66 hitters in 59 innings with a 2.44 ERA. This kid is oozing with breakout stuff, Dan.
Yeah, I agree. Lamet is definitely but I agree with you that I do think he is going to be written about a lot, right? It's going to be like, you know who nobody's talking about? Donaldson Lamet, you know, because he's really good. He had almost 11 strikeouts per nine last year. I mean, that's not something that you can really ignore. So I love that call. I think he's going to be a huge guy. And frankly, every once in a while, you have these guys in San Diego who people just forget about because it's San Diego and nobody really thinks of them as, you know, having a lot of fantasy assets. But I really like the call. I do think he's going to be someone who people who really know their baseball are going to be saying, don't forget about this guy, because you can get him for pretty dirt cheap.
Yeah. Now, my number one guy, I like him a lot more than I even liked Byron Buxton last year. There's going to be a lot of hype on him in the preseason as well, but I'll be the loudest probably. Rhys Hoskins made his debut September 10th for the Phillies. He was quickly known as the second coming of Babe Ruth, right? He was excellent. There's no denying that. He had a 259 batting average, 396 on base percentage, 618 slugging percentage, and 18 homers. He was awesome, but he wasn't the best young outfielder in that time. It was Matt Olson of the Oakland A's who batted 278 with 20 homers and a slugging percentage 118 points higher than Hoskins. What's more is that Matt Olson is a full year younger and had even more power in the minor leagues than Hoskins, despite playing in a significantly more difficult ballpark for power hitters. I think you can grab yourself 40 to 50 homers deep into drafts if you wait for Olson.
Yeah, I mean, there is zero denying his power potential, obviously. I mean, he showed it throughout the minors, and he had 24 homers in 216 plate appearances last season. I mean, that's not normal, you know what I mean? So, and again, what the two guys that you identify are perfect kind of sleepers, because nobody thinks about the Athletics and nobody thinks about the Padres on draft day. You just don't, you know, fantasy owners sort of have it in their mind that it's like, well, there's nobody really on those teams. You know, Will Myers, fine, but there's nobody really to think about. And guys like that get completely overlooked. I mean, I'm sure the average fantasy owner listening to this, they may not have even heard of Matt Olson before you just mentioned him. You know what I mean? So he is a great call. He has massive power potential, and I like it. He flew totally under the radar.
He won me some fantasy leagues, man. I know who he is. Yeah. He was really, really good.
Yeah, he went on a huge run at the end of the season. It was great.
Yeah. All right, Dan, let's finish this off with some trivia, man. We had a bunch of people ask for it. Some people saying, I don't even miss the podcast, but just bring back the trivia with Dan because they love it so much. So
yeah.
Let's do it, man. You can ask me the questions again this time.
All right, I've got two questions this time. All right, I took it easy since we're just sort of stepping our toes, but I like these, okay? Ready? Two of the following six players had a 1,000 OPS or greater. Name the two. Okay, so I'm going to give you six players. Only two of them had an OPS of 1,000 or greater last season.
Okay.
You ready?
And it's not like tricky. It's like for the full season. It's for not the, like against lefties or in September.
No, full season. 1,000 okay. OPS. There you go. Okay. But only two of them did. Is it you out of six guys, two of them? A, Nolan Arenado.
No.
B, Jose Ramirez.
No.
C, Bryce Harper. D, Charlie Blackmon. E, Paul Goldschmidt. Or F, Freddie Freeman.
I'm going to go with Freeman for sure. And Jose Ramirez did not do it. I don't think Arenado did it. I'm going to go with Blackmon as my other one. Blackmon and Freddie Freeman.
Blackmon and Freddie Freeman. Well, Blackmon was a great guess, and that is correct. Freeman did not do it. It was actually Harper.
Okay.
Harper was the guy.
Harper,
the
yeah.
Other one. But
Harper
that was good.
Was my third Blackmon guess was because the guy. He knows his on-base percentages yeah. there, but I thought it was maybe a little tricky, and I thought Freeman would be the tricky answer.
No, I tried to trick you with Blackmon because I feel like Blackmon is a guy who people are just sort of like, yeah, whatever, Charlie Blackmon.
Yeah,
I
mean, just steals and runs, realize. Right? You know,
no, right, exactly. But he season. Would a great season, a huge power season. He had over a 600 slugging percentage. Yeah, Freeman fell just short. But and I mentioned Jose Ramirez. He's up there. He had a 957. So that surprised me when I sort of looked at
did
it.
He really?
So, but that was pretty. Yeah, he did. He was top 10, I think,
okay.
in the majors, and it, which was surprising. So I tried to throw in some guys who might sort of, you know, I thought Blackmon might be a little tough, but that was very good.
Okay, all one right. out of two, this man. I got to get my belt back here. I've held the belt for like five straight trivia episodes. I don't know if it was like actually getting the belt or if I just claimed I got the belt, but I need to get it this time.
Yeah, you've got it, man. All right, this is it, though. I've only given you two. Next time, I'll give you four, so you have plenty of time. But okay, there were nine pitchers last year who threw at least 150 innings and had an ERA below three, okay? Of those nine pitchers, only one had both more than a strikeout per inning and at least a 50% ground ball rate.
I know who it is.
Was you do? You don't even need the choices?
I don't need the choices. If I get this right,
forget it.
I am eating steak tonight and ice cream for lunch. It's Aaron Nola.
No, he didn't have an ERA below three.
What was his ERA?
Unless he's just not a qualified pitcher, then perhaps then that's my fault. But I don't think it was below three.
Oh, crud. It was 3.54.
Yep, it was way over.
He was so good in the second half. How was his ERA not below three?
Because his first half was terrible. That's why. Yeah, it was 3.54, yeah, his ERA.
Oh, man. I'm looking at his numbers right now. Aaron Nola is really good. 10 strikeouts per nine innings. And his ground ball percentage was one of the best in the majors.
But 49.8. Yeah, it is. So do you want your choices then? I'll still give you a chance to get it right.
Okay, yeah, I'll get my choices. Right. I'm sad, though.
I don't know. Well, you went bold, Bobby.
I wanted to be a hero, man. I should have just chilled.
Yeah, you've got to take it easy. Got to take everything you get. Okay, so remember, ERA below three, more than a strikeout per inning, more than a 50% ground ball rate. Ready?
Yeah.
A, Clayton Kershaw. B, Luis Severino. C, Gio Gonzalez. D, Alex Wood.
Okay, give me the qualifications again. What's needed? How many strikeouts per nine?
At least nine per nine. So at least one per inning.
At least nine. I don't think Gio did that. I think Gio was under nine. Otherwise, he'd be my pick. I'm going to go ahead and go with Alex Wood here.
Alex Wood fell just short. I think that his ground ball rate, sorry, now I'm starting, it was just under 50%. It was actually Severino, who had a, he had a 2.98 ERA, 10.7 strikeouts per nine, and a 50.6 ground ball rate.
Wow.
I know. Wood was just under, to be fair. Wood was, Alex Wood, yeah, he had a 2.72 ERA, a 53% ground ball rate, but fell just under the strikeouts, 8.9.
Bummer, man. Yeah. What a fail. Everyone's here waiting for trivia, and I don't deliver.
I need, especially since you mentioned Luis Severino before in your comparison, I was like, yeah, yeah, he's going to be in Luis Severino on the brain, man. So I thought you would have it.
I think you knew that if you asked me historical questions, I'd win, so you just didn't do it this time.
I know you're saying that facetiously, but that is accurate because you are a monster at historical trivia. You're a monster at it. I hate it. It really makes me mad. I feel like giving you like tricky ones from this past season is always the best bet to trip you. So that is why I only asked you two. I usually ask you two current, two historical, but you're not incorrect. That is why I did not ask you historical questions, because you always get them
you
right.
You got me, man.
I know.
You win. And we're probably going to do another podcast here in like a month. We're not going to be able to do it every week just because there's just not that much to talk about. So sorry, guys. But when we come back, you will get to hear me crush Dan in trivia next time. Absolutely no mercy. I'm going to study and everything too.
That's fine. I'll give you some historical ones as well.
All right, man. Well, that's all for today's show. Dan, we really appreciate you coming on. It was fun to chat baseball
again. Yeah, great talking to you, Bobby.
All right, and if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe on iTunes so you don't miss our shows when they do come out. Leave us a review while you're at it if you don't mind. It takes like 20 seconds and really helps us out. Thanks for listening. Enjoy baseball.